What's up, everybody? This is Big Nate, and this is the podcast. Let's talk about creepy stuff. Pretty self-explanatory. We're going to talk about creepy stuff. Places, things, people, anything creepy. It's always been an interest of mine. So stay tuned, and I hope you enjoy the episode. All right, guys. Today, we're going to do our first haunting on the podcast, and it's one of my favorite hauntings to talk about. And many of you already know about the Ammons family haunting, but it's one of them things, like, you just keep going back to it because the amount of evidence for this is crazy. And to me, it's one of the more valid proof hauntings. That made no sense. It's one of the more, maybe kind of did, but you get what I'm saying. It's a haunting that has had so much validation to it, basically, by all the witnesses. That's the thing. We usually don't have pictures or witnesses, evidence. We just go by word of mouth. But in this case, we have all of this stuff. We have recordings. We have people, multiple witnesses, and some of them skeptics before they entered this home, a few of which were police officers that had seen some stuff in their line of work, being in shootings and dealing with the worst of the worst, and then one of them saying that this was the worst experience ever, the scariest thing he'd been in. And so it's a really trippy story, and I want to talk about it since we talk about creepy stuff. So let's begin. The Ammons haunting case, also known as the Demon House, is a haunting and demonic possession case that happened in Gary, Indiana, in the United States in 2011. So it's not super far back. LaToya Ammons, her mother, Rosa Campbell, and her three children, they all experienced paranormal activity in their home there in Gary, Indiana, and even outside of it when they would leave. Like, this stuff would follow them around. The story was publicized in January 2014 and received national attention. And let me preface this by saying, I guess it's not a preface. Let me go back and say that when I say they leave, they didn't actually move. They didn't have the ability to move when all this stuff was going on. It was too hard and expensive. And so when I say leave, I meant when they left the home to do things, just normal stuff. That didn't exempt them from terror. And so I feel bad for them that they had to go through this. In November 2011, LaToya Ammons, her mom, Rosa Campbell, and her three kids, ages 7, 9, and 12, all moved into a house located at 3860 Carolina Street in Gary, Indiana. Not long after the family moved in, black flies swarmed all over the porch, and this happened in December. And it seemed like the cold weather didn't even stop the flies. Like, I can't speak for everywhere, but around here in Arkansas, when cold weather hits, bugs don't come out as much, nearly as much as the summertime. And I would assume it's that way anywhere else. So it's really odd that in the winter time, right here in December, LaToya and her family are battling horse flies, as they were big black flies that just keep swarming their house. And no matter how many they killed, they just kept coming back. They thought they dealt with the issue, but, you know, then they come back out there and there's more flies. LaToya began seeing a shadow-like figure of a man that would walk around in the home. And a lot of the times they were just paralyzed in fear seeing the shadow figure walk around. But one night she mustered up enough courage to turn the lights on, check things out, but they couldn't find anybody. But muddy boot prints would pop up out of nowhere on the floor in the home. And they have pictures of these. And I know what you're going to say. Well, she could have done that herself. Yeah, totally could have. But the more that we read this story and the more witnesses that come in that talk about paranormal activity, I bet you'll begin to believe that she didn't do this herself. So hearing footsteps, seeing shadows, knocks, and they even heard growls throughout the house. This all became normal for LaToya and her family. But sadly, this would be the least troubling of all the activity they were going to experience in the home. One evening around 2 a.m., LaToya's 12-year-old daughter began levitating above her bed. One of the cousins had been over and seen this happen. The thing is LaToya had a death in the family, so the family, outside of her, you know, her extended family and such, all came over to their house for a visit, and they were all talking and staying up late and, you know, trying to comfort each other. And so while this is going on, the kids, some of the kids went to bed, and they hear a scream, and they see Latoya's, one of the cousins was like, oh my gosh, you know, this crazy stuff's going on. She's levitating. And all the family rush in there to see Latoya's 12-year-old daughter levitating above the bed. And by the way, you're going to hear me, when I talk about her kids, I'm not going to say their names. This family, another thing that helps me believe this is valid, the family has went to extra lengths to make sure the names of her children aren't ever mentioned in anything. And so you're not going to find, it's going to be really hard to find the names of her kids. So I'll just be referring to them by their ages. There's two little boys, 7 and 9, and then her daughter, which is 12. But her daughter, her 12-year-old daughter is levitating above the bed, and so the family comes to the conclusion to gather around and pray for her. And when they do this, she lowered down back onto the bed. And her family was so freaked out, her extended family, they left, and they were too afraid to stay there and had no interest in coming back. So at this point, Latoya is starting to look for help. And where she's going to go is to the local churches. But most of them don't really care. They're just not interested in it. Most of them think that the story that her and her mother are telling them doesn't really seem to have any salt to it. They just don't want to believe it. And so they're hitting a lot of dry spots. They're not getting any help. And but finally, a small little church decided to give them some advice. And they told her to clean her house with bleach and ammonia and then to anoint her home with olive oil afterwards. Now, the olive oil I've heard of, and I've done this. If anyone doesn't know, I'm a minister and a pastor, and I have performed house blessings and prayed for people that I believe were demonically influenced. And so the olive oil is definitely a normal thing for a Christian to use to anoint things. Now, the ammonia and the bleach, I don't know about all that. But you're going to hear wild stories everywhere. But they told her basically clean your house and then put olive oil on it. And she even went a step further and anointed her kids' heads with olive oil, which is, once again, a very Christian thing to do. And so this didn't really do much because the activity began again and it didn't really help. And so Latoya went a route that many do go on, and that was to hire a medium. And so she hired mediums to come in and see if they could help, because she just feels like nothing's working out. And these psychics told her that her home was overran by hundreds of demons and that she needed to move. And then she's like, well, that's not an option. I can't just move. We don't have the money, you know. And so since she couldn't afford to move, they told her to make an altar in her basement. And on this altar, she was to put a Bible, statues of Mary, Joseph, and Jesus. And she sprinkled salt around the altar on the floor of the basement. And this was supposed to help, you know, stop these demonic episodes and things, these hauntings. And they also went through the home burning incense and making the sign of the cross with the smoke throughout the house and reciting prayers. And I believe reciting Psalm 91 out of the Bible, that she would leave on Psalm 91 and put it down in the basement on that altar. And apparently this ritual seemed to help. But once again, things began all over again, but even worse than before. So they got a little bit of peace, which, by the way, Latoya was actually buying hotel rooms from time to time just so they could get a peaceful night's sleep, because these kids were being tormented all night long, her as well. Latoya, I might have said Rosa, but yeah, Latoya had to, every now and again would buy a hotel to try to get some kind of peace and get away from the home. But then after they do this ritual, it seems like things get better, but then they only get worse. The grandmother, Rosa, which would be Latoya's mother, she's seen these things, but apparently she was not tormented herself, but she did see the things that were happening to her grandkids and her daughter, and so she was a witness for all of it, saying it was very much true. So I said it comes back worse, and here's how. Her kids begin doing things with no explanation. Her sons begin to speak in low demonic voices, and they would become violent. Her kids would get like twisted smiles on their faces, like otherworldly contorted smiles, and their eyes would bulge, and they'd talk in these low voices, and it was just random when this stuff would happen. Picture how terrifying that would be to just have this happen to you at random times throughout the day. Her 7-year-old would sit in his closet and have conversations like he was talking with someone, and they would always be talking about killing. Her daughter would hear voices telling her she was going to die, and she would sit around covering up her ears just so she could try to keep the voices out. Her 9-year-old began explaining in detail how to be killed, like what it was like to be killed. Things a 9-year-old wouldn't know about. You know, and a 7-year-old sitting in a closet talking about killing people, and a daughter constantly freaking out hearing voices about telling her she's going to die. This is creepy. But as creepy as that is, the kids claimed they couldn't remember doing any of it when it would happen. So they would have these trance-like states of being where they'd smile all wicked and look creepy and threaten to kill each other or whatever. They'd go through this, but then they wouldn't remember doing any of it right after. Now, LaToya herself would get weak and would shake violently sometimes, like she was having convulsions. Her temperature would go up, and she would get lightheaded. Rosa, her mother, witnessed these things, but like I said, she herself wasn't afflicted by any of them. The boys would be thrown around by unseen forces, and at night, all the kids were plagued so badly that they could barely sleep. At one point, a lamp was even thrown by an unseen force across the room. So this is getting intense. I don't believe any of us would be able to sleep if we were living in this home either. LaToya took her kids to the doctor, not knowing what else to do. I mean, you got to give it to her. What do you do? You tried everything, and it just keeps getting worse. The doctor thought that some kind of delusion kind of had fallen over the family, like a mass psychosis, you know, or maybe that's the right word. Basically, you're all influencing each other to be crazy, but the mom's at the head of it. He was worried about her mental health because he's not seeing the spiritual side of it. Well, during this visit, when he's coming to the conclusion, there's kind of a mass hysteria breaking out in the home. Both boys begin cursing him out for no reason and yelling at him. And then one of the boys, out of nowhere, was lifted off the ground and then thrown against the wall violently. All this is happening in front of this doctor. So, obviously, see, they're not even safe outside of the home. So, at this point, they rush the boys over to the hospital out of the doctor's office, and it only gets crazier. The boys become violent, and it took 5 grown men to hold them down. If you go talk to any exorcist or anybody like that, they tell you that strength like this is very common with the demon-possessed. Otherworldly strength that they would know, you know, like you'll hear stories of little girls picking up an office desk and throwing it, and people say that's just too extreme. Well, you know, you hear accounts of this all the time, and this is one of those things. This family, like, just the way that they're handling all this, like, after the fact of, they're like, they just want to stay, you know, in their house, not be plagued by this stuff anymore. You know, like, to me, it's got some validity to it, plus all these witnesses, like doctors and cops and everything. But after this, they rush the boys over to the hospital from the doctor's office, and the cops are having to, like, hold them down, and or not the cops, but the people that took, you know, orderlies or whatever in the hospital. It took 5 grown men to hold the 7 and a 9-year-old down. There's no way. So, not knowing what to do at this point, the hospital decides that, I believe they call it DCS, in this area, we call it DHS. It's basically the Department of Child Services. We call it the Department of Human Services. So it's the same thing. So I'm probably going to say DHS just for my own, you know, I'm used to that. But they're caseworkers, social workers. So they don't know what to do. So they call DHS to investigate the kids and look for signs of abuse because I can't blame anybody for how they treat any of this, because this is a kind of thing that doesn't happen all the time. You don't plan for this. We don't talk about supernatural things. So what do? You just keep going through a protocol that's normal. And so they call DHS and they're like, come see if these kids are experiencing abuse at home. It could be leading to this crazy activity. And honestly, they couldn't find much in that area. For the most part, the kids, the mom, all of them would act normal until these episodes happened. And stuff just kept getting weird. So the boys attacked each other. And the older boy tried to kill his brother. This is happening in the hospital. And Rosa, the grandmother, Latoya's mom, tried to step in. And she grabbed the boy's hand. And here's where it gets just completely insane. He then began smiling at her while she said, "You aren't my grandson. You are a demon." She's saying this to her grandson, and he's just getting this twisted smile on his face like they've been doing, you know, this whole time. And he begins to walk backwards while she's holding on to his arm up the wall. He walks backwards. Now, picture that. She's holding on to his arm trying to get him out of this trance where he's trying to choke his brother to death. And he just smiles at her all demonically and then begins walking backwards up the wall. Yeah. Wow. And everybody's seeing this. Not just the family. The social worker's seeing this. Latoya's in there with this. You know, nurses are seeing this. And he walks backwards all the way up to the ceiling and then flips over his grandmother onto the ground behind her. And this was seen by everybody. The medical staff, the family, the DHS worker. And they freak out like anybody would. And the DHS worker even runs out of there. And the DHS worker named in this was Valerie, was her name. And she was the first to run out of the room. And they fetched the doctor to see if he could do anything. Because once again, they don't know how to handle this. So they're like, get the doctor. Maybe he does. And so this is a social worker. And she reports she's seen this. This isn't like some, like they're not going to fabricate this kind of story because that could get them in a lot of trouble. And so by the time the doctor got back in there, the boy had no idea what happened and couldn't perform any other feat like that. And so he didn't even know what happened and he couldn't even perform the same feat. And I believe, if I didn't clarify, it was the older brother that was attacking the younger one. And it was the older brother that did the backward walking up the wall. And so, yeah, it was the older boy. So the older boy is the one that tried to kill his brother. And then while the grandmother grabbed a hold of him, he walked backwards up the wall and flipped over her and scared everybody to death. And the DHS worker ran out of the room to get the doctor. And he wanted to see if it could be done again because everybody's saying this, because that sounds like a crazy story. But the boy couldn't remember and acted like he didn't know what was going on. And so they come to the conclusion that there's some kind of mass hysteria in this home, and Latoya is the blame for it because her delusions have affected kids in such an extreme way that they're doing extreme things. And so they think that it's just all in the mind, which we can say, you know, come on. But, I mean, what do you think in that moment? Like, you know, it's not a normal report you put down. This stuff is happening. And so, basically, the kids get taken away. They have to take them away. They believe it's for their own protection to get them away from their mom until she can sort things out before they can let them live with her again. And so, everything seems to go from bad to worse for Latoya. Not only is she experiencing all this paranormal junk, now her kids are being taken away. But Latoya finally seemed to get a break whenever a man named Father Mike said he would come to investigate the home after hearing the story. While he visited her home, lights began to flicker on and off when he would go into a certain room, and only when he would do that. Then the blinds in the kitchen would start moving and being pushed around by themselves. And so he comes to the conclusion there must be something in this home. While he's there, Latoya gets a really bad headache, and Father Mike placed a crucifix on her forehead, and she began to convulse. After 4 hours of being there and kind of doing these tests and looking around at all this, Father Mike fully believed demons were at work in the home and in the body of Latoya. So, Valerie, the social worker who's seen this insanity of the boy flipping over and everything and screaming, ran out of the room. She had to come and do a wellness check on LaToya, you know, because DHS's job is they don't want to keep the kids away from their family. They want the family to get their stuff together so the kids can live with them. It's hard enough to find foster parents. So they're not wanting kids just to be lost in the system. And so a lot of times DHS workers get a bad rap, and I just want to defend the good ones because, you know, they're trying to make sure families can stay together, but they want the kids to be safe. And so during this time where the kids are having to, you know, stay away from their mom, Valerie's checking in on LaToya as part of her job to see if she's kind of getting stuff together and getting her mental health in order so these kids can come and live with their mother again. So she's coming to do this wellness check, and so LaToya asks Father Mike if he'll be there during this checkup, and so Father Mike came. And so as they looked around the house, things began to happen, especially when they went into the basement. And so let me add, too, that some of the local police came during this inspection as well. So we've got the local police, Father Mike, and LaToya, and Valerie, the caseworker, and I believe Rosa was there, Valerie's mother. So we got a good little crew here coming into this home, and they begin to see things happen. Every one of them do. And especially, like I said, when they went into the basement of the home where they believe all the activity was really genuine. That's where it was, the source was. One of the officers reported that a door kept moving into different positions while no one was using it. Like, he kept making a mental note that this door would be at a certain angle, and every time he would come back, it would be moved around like someone was using it, but he knew for a fact nobody in there was going in and out of that door. One of the officers, or Captain Austin, was one of the cops there, and he decided to take some pictures on his phone, and his pictures captured shadow figures in the house. And I believe one source said that the shadow figures, like if he zoomed in kind of on the face, they had demonic looking features. But he actually, they have pictures of this, and you can see them if you want to. You can go online and look up this stuff and find all the evidence they're talking about. And so he's picking up these shadowy figures on his phone that have demonic looking faces. And so everybody's completely creeped out at this point because they're all seeing things that they had no explanation for. And Captain Austin was a seasoned cop that had even been caught in firefights. Like, he had been in gunfights. He'd been dealt with rapists and bad people. He'd seen it all, but he claims this house was the scariest experience of his career. When he left the house right after this investigation at one point, his radio turned on by itself while he was on the phone, and a threatening voice yelled, "Are you in there?" And it was so loud that the person he was talking to on the phone heard the voice as well. So it wasn't something in his head or that he made up. Someone else actually heard it. And then he started noticing he was having some car issues right after he had been to that house, and he took his car in for a checkup. It was some kind of seat issue, I think, where the seat would move by itself randomly. And they told him that was a good thing he had brought it in, because if not, it could have caused him to have an accident. It could have gotten him killed. And so some of the cops that were there that were involved in this incident were so afraid because of what was going on in the home that they quit their jobs and moved out of Indiana completely. Well, out of Gary, Indiana anyway. So it was scary enough. It made cops quit their jobs and move their whole families. So crazy stuff's going on here. While the kids were in the care of DHS, they were seeing, you know, psychologists or psychiatrists, people, doctors, to try to help get them help. And the kids would talk about going into trances, and they believed that the demons that were plaguing them were causing this. And they told LaToya that she could see the kids while they were taken, but she was not allowed to talk about any of the events that were going on in the home with them, because they believe still that she's had an influence on them and it's causing them to act crazy. So she's allowed to see them, but not talk about anything demonic or whatever. And so during this time, Valerie, the original DHS worker, actually quit her job from fear of what she had witnessed during that hospital visit. So she quit the case, quit the job, all of it, because she was so freaked out over what she'd seen in the home, what she had seen with the kids, and she just had enough. So LaToya was so desperate to get her kids back, she decided she needed to get out, and she was going to find a job, and she was going to find a new home, be able to afford and get a new apartment, new house, whatever. She was going to do whatever it took to get her kids back. So she's actively trying, but she just can't catch a break. Now, at one point, Father Mike decided he wanted to investigate the home again and was going to do a minor exorcism of the home. Let's just call it a blessing. He wanted to bless the home, and he was trying to actively get permission from his bishop to do an exorcism over LaToya's family. But the way that it works in the Catholic Church, that's how you, there's a chain of command you go through. And if your bishop over your area doesn't give you permission to do the exorcism, you can't do it. And so he's trying to convince, there's plenty of evidence to prove that this place is actually demonically infested and that the family is demonically oppressed or possessed to be able to do an exorcism. So he wants to come look at the house and do a blessing on it, an intense blessing anyway. And so the cops come with him when he does it again this time. And so he and Captain Austin, one of the cops that, you know, had the shadow figures on his phone and had to have his car fixed. Captain Austin was one of the officers present once again. And this time, a new DHS worker named Samantha, who took Valerie's place, was on the case. So once again, this group, another group goes into the home, consisting of most of the people that have been in there before. And one of the strangest things to date would happen during this visit. A kind of oil or slime began to drop from the blinds, and there was no source of it. Like, they had no, there was no place that this was dripping from. They couldn't find out. It was just appearing. And so this oil's on the blinds, and everybody's like, what is this? It just seemed like it had been there, and it wasn't dripping from anywhere, but it wasn't dried anything. It was still wet, slime-looking stuff, oil stuff. And down in the basement under the stairs, the cops decided to dig up some of the fresh-looking earth that was found underneath the staircase. And there they found a fake nail, socks with bottoms cut off of them, women's underwear, a candy wrapper, and some other miscellaneous things. It was clear. I think they found also at one point, they found like a aluminum tray with a burned candle in it. So it's clear that some kind of weird ritual had been taking place in this home at some point. And they then took a picture of the oil on the blinds. They wiped it off and then they shut the door. They wanted to see if by wiping this off, they could find out what was causing it. They even put a Q-tip in the door, like the lock thing or the door slot, so they could make sure, you know, it would have fell out or broke if somebody went in the home while they were away. So when they came back, the priest apparently walked onto the porch and went white as a ghost. And Captain Austin sees that and he says, Father, what's wrong? And he says, there's oil back on the blinds. And so it had come back again. So Samantha, for whatever reason, I don't know why this DHS worker would decide to do this, she reached out and touched the oil, and it caused her hand at the fingertips to turn white. And she then reports that her pinky began to throb so badly, like it had been crushed under a heavy weight, like her pinky just got shattered. She then has a panic attack and runs out of the home and says, I am never coming back into this place. Captain Austin was in agreement with her, and he said he did not want to go back into that place. Can you blame him? I can. So Father Mike decided that it is time for an exorcism, and he really began pursuing approval from the bishop, which stayed denied for a while. He never got it. And so, like I said, he moves in he looks up after, you know, he wants to do this minor exorcism himself now. And so he begins to study on how to do it. And then when he felt like he was prepared enough, he comes back and he's doing this blessing. And it takes like 2 hours. And he prayed over the house, and everyone there pretty much said, like during this little minor exorcism that he did, it just felt like an evil presence was watching them, was present watching them and angry. And these are cops, a DHS worker. They know that this sounds crazy. They know that this sounds off, but they're doing it any that they're admitting the fact that something supernatural has to be happening there. A little time later, Father Mike actually got an approval to do a full-blown true exorcism. And when he did so on LaToya, she began to convulse and experience intense pain. And she compared that pain to being worse than childbirth, and she would know she'd had kids. So apparently, she passed out during this exorcism session, and she believed that it made the exorcism less effective. So the paranormal activity didn't fully stop after this first session. So they come to the conclusion that the demon that haunted LaToya and possessed her was named Beelzebub, which means Lord of the Flies, referencing the amount, the huge pile of horseflies that are infesting her, you know, home, her screened-in porch. So Father Mike had this name written down and put into an envelope by his assistant, and they surrounded it with blessed salt. And whenever LaToya would have an episode, Father Mike's assistant was instructed to burn up the envelope in the fire and throw the ashes in a bonfire at the church. So this seemed to work. So when LaToya would have episodes and the assistant would call, there would be a call made to Father Mike that she was having these episodes, he would tell his assistant to then burn that letter up that had this name written down in it and throw it into a fire and made into ashes, and then throw those ashes into a bonfire at the church. And apparently this helped. And then finally, the final nail in the coffin was when what would come to be the final exorcism of LaToya, it took place, and they believe that they fully exorcised the demon from her at that point. And shortly after, LaToya got her kids back, and they were able to move into a new home with no more paranormal occurrences. Trippy story, right? She gives all the credit to God for the deliverance. So now, that's kind of the end of the Ammons part of it, but there's more that came later. A lot of people know Zach Bagans, the host of Ghost Adventures, which, by the way, I'm not a fan of him. Not really. He's just too fake. I don't know. You can say what you want. He's rich and I'm not, so he's doing something right. So maybe he's just a very eccentric man. Well, you'd have to be to do what he does. But Zach Bagans hears about this story, and he decides he can't pass it up. He's got to buy the home, and he buys the home that all this took place in, and he has a whole documentary called The Demon House that he believes is cursed, which I don't believe he believes that it's technically cursed, because he sells it on YouTube. You can watch it for $7, and I'm sure you've got DVDs somewhere, and so it's such a cursed documentary to watch, but, do it anyway, because I'm not putting that title on there just to make people want to buy it or anything. But anyway, I watched it, and it's crazy. Let's just put it that way. Things did happen to him that you can't really deny. He wears these big these prism glasses now, and he didn't always wear glasses. And during this time in the home, he shut himself in the home. There's a point on the night vision, it shows him, he sees something, and he flips out and runs away, and he's holding his eyes and saying his eyes hurt. And afterwards, he got a medical condition where he was almost blind, and he has to wear these prism glasses in order to see. Now he wears these big, thick glasses everywhere he goes. So something did happen to him. And so he's seen things. He talked to people. And there's at one point, LaToya's brother, they're all living in a different apartment, and they didn't want to talk to Zach Bagans. They wanted nothing to do with that home because they were so afraid of it, and they were afraid of Zach because they found out he bought the home. Obviously, they knew he did that, but then he was he had been in it and then wanted to come interview the family, and they said, no, you've been in that house. There's probably something attached to you. We want nothing to do with it. But for a little bit of cash, LaToya's brother snuck out and wanted to talk to Zach and tell him what he had seen in that home.
And he did this, and the family found out that he did, and they wouldn't let him back in their apartment. They're like, nope, you can't come back in here. And so he had to go be spiritually cleansed, I guess, go see a priest and be blessed before they would even let him back in the home. Yeah, that's how much they did not want to do with that home. So Zach Bagans and his crew come into the home to investigate and do all kinds of stuff, and there's so much crazy stuff that happened, and it's legitimate. Even though I don't believe Zach Bagans is the most honest person with his paranormal stuff, there's stuff that happened you just can't deny. There was a man he had come in that checked the levels of, like, you know, if there's gas or carbon monoxide, you know, things like that in the home, checked the levels. He came into the home, and afterwards he left, and he had to be hospitalized. A tree nearly hit him when he was leaving the home. It just tipped over into the road. And he barely missed it. And then after that, he got diagnosed with cancer. And it was so left field, he couldn't believe it. And it was all, like, right after he left this home, all these terrible things happened to him. I told you about Zach Bagans, his eyes being messed up. He had an assistant that went crazy during this filming, saying he was seeing this ghost, and it scared him to death. And he quit. He got off the team, but he was getting violent with people, and then to this day he still acts crazy. He went and got like 666 tattooed on his hand, and he started getting into like some demonic stuff all after he was in this home. He just went nuts. So that was crazy. They finally got to the point where Zach Bagans was just kind of like, you know what, this house is just so twisted, I'm done with it. And he had it bulldozed to the ground. And now they have trouble with people like Satanists going over there to the spot where it was and having seances, because they're like, oh yeah, portal to hell here. Like, let's go do seances and see what we can conjure up. So they have trouble with that now, since he bulldozed it. Zach Bagans, actually, when he bulldozed the home, he had them take the staircase out of the home and he put it in his haunted museum, like he does with every other creepy thing he finds during these little adventures. So Zach Bagans claims this place is mega, mega haunted and wanted nothing to do with it. And they were better off bulldozing the home to the ground, which is kind of funny to me in a way, because, like, if it's some kind of spiritual thing, I don't think knocking over some wood's going to help anything. But he apparently thought it did. And so you can go watch that documentary. You can watch any of the, I mean, you can go over any of the stuff. I go over and look online, find all kinds of stuff for it. I did watch that, the Demon House documentary, so it gets a little bit of credit. I listened to the podcast Mile Higher and got a lot of info from that. I've listened to Lights Out podcast, got a lot of info from that. I've watched documentaries like crazy. I can't name them all. There's so many. But I did watch Demon House. That was a big one that I got a lot of information from. And so I give credit to all these for helping me put this episode together. And, you know, I do the best I can. If I mess up here or there, I'm sorry, but I try to be as accurate as possible. So if I, you know, maybe got a couple little details wrong, if I did, you know, sorry, but I try my best. But I can tell you, as much as I've studied this, you got the pretty much the, you've got the whole picture in there. Like, I promise, the things I talk about, I've watched and listened to this case enough. I know a good deal about what happened. So yeah, this is probably one of the longer episodes I've put together, working on 40 minutes. But the Ammonsville, or the Ammonsville, the Ammons family haunting, such a strange thing. And go online and look it up. Look up the picture proof and listen. One of the cop, Captain Austin, that guy, yeah, you can just tell he's not a bull crapper. Like, he's a legit cop that loved, you know, loved serving his country, and, you know, he's just a man's man, and he's on there like, this place is jacked up, like it is, there's something evil in it. So I believe it's a pretty valid, it's got enough evidence to be proven valid. And so, yeah. But yeah, thank you guys for tuning in, and I hope you tune in for my next one.